If you go to church and if you can't answer this question, yes, would we be missed if we didn't exist? If you can't answer a definitive yes, then you should just stop going to church and you should go volunteer every Sunday somewhere. And I promise you, I think that that's more the way of Jesus than seeing and hearing information.
Hello, my friends. Gary here today with you and got another episode for you. We're going to be hanging with Nate Stone, who is at Bar Church in Seattle, Washington. Yes, I said Bar Church. And I'm excited for you to hear from him. Nate is an awesome guy, innovative guy. He's doing something creative in Seattle and trying to reimagine what faith could look like practiced outside the context of maybe your traditional church kind of setting. So you're going to hear more about what that means for Bar Church in Seattle. And I think you're going to love Nate and his unfiltered and just energetic kind of personality. So let's go ahead and roll it. Hello, friends. Thanks for joining us on another episode of the Voices podcast. I'm stoked for you to hear from a new friend of mine, Nate Stone, who is at Bar Church Seattle. Hopefully you're already intrigued by that reality. But Nate, thanks for joining us. Appreciate having you today.
You bet.
All right, man. So let's just jump right into it. We just need to hear a little bit of your story. So that's a big part of what we're trying to do is share stories of how people are maybe progressing, evolving, reimagining. And so give us a little background on who you are and how you got to the place where you're doing Bar Church Seattle.
Absolutely. So I, born and raised Seattleite, lived here my whole life, probably never will leave because it's amazing. So obviously I started this thing called Bar Church. So there's a lot of filler gaps. How do you end up starting a thing called Bar Church? So really quickly, I did grow up when I was younger. I went to church and then I would say right at what I would call the age of reason, right around like 12, I essentially stopped going to church and stopped going to church for over a decade while it had lost its interest to me. And then when I was in my early 20s, without getting into a ton of detail, I just got to a point in my life where it dawned on me that I really disliked who I was. And not just my actions, but just like internally, I hated what was going on inside of me and mm-hmm. angry and sad. And I burnt every bridge that I ever created. I just kept on destroying relationships. And so I came to a point in my life where I recognized that the way I was functioning in the world just wasn't working for me. And so started revisiting some of, you know, my spiritual background and church background, while also exploring some other ways of spirituality, which led me to start going to this church called Eastlake in Bothell. It's still in Bothell. And while I was there, I really just started I had actually visited a year before I came to this moment where I was like, something has to change. But I hadn't hit rock bottom. So I'd hit my rock bottom, decided to start doing it again. So I started going to this church and everything that they talked about just really resonated with me. And about 6 months in, I found that like a lot of my friends were coming with me and I just was feeling like, you know what, maybe this is a way that I could help the world. Like maybe I could do this ministry thing or whatever we call it. We have these words that we call ministry and pastor, and I don't even know what they mean. But maybe this is something I could do for like work. And so I called my sister. My sister had stayed involved in church and is still involved in church to this day. And I was like, hey, what do you think? Any ideas? And she was like, you should go talk to my friend Jeremy. He just got hired on at the church. And so Christmas Eve 2009, I went and talked to Jeremy, and I told him what was going on. I was like, hey, man, I am new to this, or like new to renewing kind of this church thing in my life and spirituality, and asking these questions. I don't know where I am in a lot of ways, but I am curious like what it would look like to do this as a job. I think maybe I could be good at this. Like these really like remedial questions. And he said, I'm thinking about doing an internship program actually. Would that be something that interested you? And initially I was like, no, I'm 24, 25. I'm past like the internship time. I don't have enough time as it is to like give more free time. But after thinking about it for a while, it still made more sense than like quitting, you know, my job and going back to like seminary or something like that, which I'm glad I didn't do. Nothing against seminary, but I'm glad I didn't do. And so long story short, I ended up interning and interned for about 6 months before it really answered the question, is this something you'd like to dedicate your life to? I felt after 6 months, I was like, yes, this is, I think this is like a niche. This is how I can best serve the world, at least at that point in my life. So after 6 months in, I got hired on in like an operations type of role, and then became a campus pastor when ESAC was multi-site. And I did that for about 5 years before starting what I now have started and founded with some other people, this thing called Bar Church.
Yeah. So this church, I mean, you were somebody that didn't really come from a church background. I mean, yeah, you had some roots way a long time ago, but so this church must have been doing something different. If you and your friends are all attending that wouldn't classify maybe as church people, right?
I mean, yeah.
What was different about this?
Yeah, I think place? I think the biggest thing was permission to process. Mm-hmm. Okay. So like when I was coming back, I don't remember the first like 6 months. I couldn't tell you a single topic that was covered in those initial 6 months, right? I don't remember the information. I remember how I felt. And so, you know, at that point in my life, I was really, really broken, and I just was sad. Yeah. I was just had years of like being angry and frustrated and bitter had accumulated, and that stuff has to go somewhere. And so it had internalized and just stayed with me. And so I would, you know, it would manifest in blowing up in ways that didn't make sense, or drinking, like blacking out, getting blackout drunk like once a week, which wasn't like that was a pretty normal thing for me. And so one of the greatest benefits to attending church at that time was just permission to just show up and just be where I was at,
yeah.
Which I think is just really, really healthy. So I remember, you know, I used to get embarrassed about this. Now it just is what it is. But I remember showing up and I just would, the lights were down low, first three songs, and I would just show up and I would sit in the back, and I would usually show up late because I'd have these internal arguments about whether even to go. And then I would either get emotional or like actually cry, which, you know, obviously like as a dude, I don't love talking about like emotional breakdowns, but that's just the truth. I hadn't cried in so long, and it just was like coming out. And even I couldn't even say like why. It just was like, it just felt like, so this is a tangent, but biologically they say that when you hug another individual, your estrogen levels rise, your testosterone levels lower, and you start to neurologically and biologically like relax, which is why like theoretically like or anecdotally like if you've ever gotten like a really big fight with your girlfriend or something like that, and they're like, just don't touch me right now, it's because in some ways the body's responding, and it knows that once it engages physically, like it's going to respond with a letdown. Like they even find like with cows, like like that's part of the reason they massage cows and stuff is because it helps them relax and calm down. Anyway, there is a point to this. When I started showing up to church, it felt like opportunity for like emotional letdown, and I was finding just like the waterworks were just like just would show up,
yeah,
and it was like a breath, and I could just be, and I could process, and I could know that things weren't okay, and that was okay in itself.
Yeah.
So that was different.
Yeah,
I'd never experienced that before.
Yeah, especially in church, it's usually like put on plastic smiley face and pretend everything's great, and
yeah,
it's not the place where, yeah.
And to be fair, church gets critiqued for that a lot, and I would say that, you know, Christianity isn't unique in that. I had gone to other spiritual places as well. And if you've never gone to other like Hindu temples or Buddhist temples, you know, there's this like idea that their liturgy all looks very different, but it doesn't. Like they each have their own unique language. And like when I visited a Buddhist temple, and you know, you have your chants that you're supposed to follow along with, and no one really tells you what's going on. And like, it's very similar to going to a church and sitting down and being like, what is happening? What are we doing right now? Yeah. And it feels uncomfortable. And like in any other environment in the world, if you showed up, sat in rows and started chanting together, you'd be like, what is this cult? But religion kind of gets a pass. And so like, it wasn't just that Eastlake or Christianity like does that well. Like a lot of spiritual centers don't create spaces where people can just be they are.
Yeah, so unique. Okay, so you have this conversation with this Jeremy fella, and you tell him, hey, what could this look like? And you get involved, except for about 5 years, you're on staff at this place, and then you all of a sudden you're gonna off-ramp, time to do bar church. What's the story of the transition there, and why?
Right. So a lot of it is wiring, like, and this is both a good thing and a bad thing, but I'm, like, constantly discontent. Like, I'm always, like, figuring out, like, what's next? And like, what should I do here? And
our wives should hang out. This is like classic Yuri.
Oh, it's fine. Our poor wives. Seriously. Amy, my wife, is so great at this. She like really, she's the opposite. And so, you know, I do think, you know, when they say opposites attract, I don't think it's just a cute phrase. I think that like we're wired to be with people who are different than us, because when you're with people who are different than us, they can help bring out your strengths.
Yeah.
Which is an argument for like depolarizing everything, right? Like if I didn't, the best thing for me as an individual is to be with a wife who is polarizingly differently than I do. Mm. Yeah, I am. Anyway, so part of it is just my wiring. I'm like always like, okay, maybe I should do this. Maybe I should do that. Maybe I should do that. And so even when I was stoked and got hired on, I knew that it wasn't like my final destination. I knew that there was always going to be a next thing. And part of what I get excited about is constantly journeying about innovating. And so I would say, you know, 2 years into my 5 years at Eastlake, I really started putting like the pen to paper, like what would, if I did something, when I do something, what will it look like and why? And so bar church, I didn't wake up one morning and was like, you know what? Of this place, I'm out. I'm going to do bar church. This place sucks. Like I left really amicably. Like I'm still really close with a lot of my Eastlake friends. I left because I had to. I had to do. This was a thing that I had to do. And my guess is there will be other things that I feel like I have to do in my life because of who I am. And I think we need people like that. And we also need people like Amy who are like, do you though? Do you have to do that? There's this personality test that you take and it gives you like a nickname, and personality tests are always interesting to me, but the name I got or the personality I got was the arsonist, which means you're good at lighting fires, which can be a good thing. Another thing, strengths finder, one of my top strengths is activator, which is getting people going and moving. I'm a doer. I like to get stuff done. But the problem with the arsonist is your tendency is to, if you're not careful, burn things down. And so I'm always lighting fires. And Amy's kind of the one, like, she's always got, like, a bucket of water on the side and be like, I think you're going to need this.
carry that one with you.
Yeah. She packs the proverbial fire extinguisher in my backpack all the time. So this bar church wasn't a dissatisfied thing. It was this is something that I want to do. I want to create the place that I want to be a part of for a long time. Okay. What is the church that I want to be a part of and I want to invite my friends to? What does that look like?
Yeah, well, and I feel like even as you frame it that way, it's almost like it, I know it's not like on purpose, but kind of taking away that like mystifying kind of spiritual experience of God told me I have to, like, you don't have that as the description. It's more just like, I want to be a part of this kind of a community, so I'm just going to create it.
Yeah. And that's for sure. Like, I've never heard from God. And this might just be part of my problem, but whenever people do, my first reaction is, no, you didn't. which isn't nice and really unfair also. I also think there's like a lot of room for interpretation. Like, you know, like Paul has his, you know, road to Damascus experience. And I think I had my road to Damascus experience when I realized like I hated my life. So I was like, this is terrible. I hate who I am. So something's got to change. But no, I never had this moment where God was like, go and do this bar church thing. It was very practically, what am I going to do in a few years? And what is it going to look like? I want to create a church where we sit and have beers and talk about what it means to be human in a corporate environment. I mean, it wasn't strategic. Like a lot of times we get this question like, oh, that's so creative. Way to like reach other people. And I'm like, oh man. You might be right, but boy, is that language terrible. That's just not, we're not doing bar church to be strategic. I'm not trying to trick people into going to church. I want to have a beer with my friends and talk about meaningful things and take meaningful action to make the world a more beautiful place. So I'm going to try to create that place. And a lot of other, like the why and the how and all that stuff, we got to figure out the what. All that stuff is malleable, but ultimately, like, just trying to create that place.
Yeah. So good. Okay, so obviously what you're doing is outside the box, innovative. So as you, now that you've kind of pulled out of this, you know, being a pastor, a minister, whatever title
whatever
you
want to it is, yeah.
And you're kind of looking back into that world, what are some of the things that you're seeing that you're like, this is not going to work for future generations? Like, something has to change.
Right. And that's such a good question. Because in many ways, Bar Church is a, hopefully in a kind way, a critique of the current model. We're like, okay, what's happening right now that we can change? And, you know, Seattle is this hub of innovation. Like, people are always creatively trying to figure out new ways of doing things. We have Amazon.com because some guys are like, there's got to be a better way to sell books. and now we have this global giant because some dudes decided that buying books at Barnes & Noble wasn't their thing. And so Seattle is this area of innovation. So in many ways, the church sometimes is reticent for that. And so we're just trying to innovate and ask, yeah, this question, what does the next iteration of church look like? And I think there's a lot of ways it's going to look different. I think maybe the biggest factor that's going to change is I think people who go to church will be unwilling to participate and give their time, money, resources, all that to a church that doesn't actively make a difference in the world. Mm-hmm. So if you go to a church and you're in the younger generation, I'm 32. So if you're my generation, if you go to church, I think if you can't answer the question, does my church do anything to make the world beautiful? I think people will eventually just stop going. They'd rather like go volunteer at a soup kitchen or, you know, mentor a kid. You know, like, and I would argue like that if your church doesn't make the world a more beautiful place, then that you should do that. You should stop going to church. Like, you don't have enough time for that crap. So just stop going to church. And every Sunday, here's what I believe. If you go to church and if you can't answer this question, yes, would we be missed if we didn't exist? If you can't answer a definitive yes, then you should just stop going to church and you should go volunteer every Sunday somewhere. And I promise you, I think that that's more the way of Jesus than seeing and hearing information, which I think in many ways,
that's good.
Looking at, in many ways, we started Bar Church after looking at the life of Jesus, which sounds so silly. It was like, oh, isn't everyone? And so I counted, I went through and I counted how many miracles Jesus performed and I counted how many parables he told. I did this a few years back when I was processing and he tells, I might script the number, so sorry if someone on here is like, no, that's wrong. It's 47. I think he, if I remember correctly, he tells 42 parables and he performs 40 miracles, or there's 40 examples of unique miracles that he performs in the Gospels, which tells us like Jesus didn't meet places every Sunday and talk about who God is. He just didn't.
Yeah.
You know, he spent half his time helping people reorient themselves to an identity to God and their brothers and sisters of humanity. And then he spent his other time actively doing things with no agenda. There's almost zero follow-up in the New Testament. Like, he's not like, all right, well, and what did you do with that sight I gave you? You just don't hear back from the people he helps. He just helps people for the sake of helping people. He does good for the sake of doing good. And good news is only so helpful if you don't actually do something active with people. So telling people good news doesn't really mean that much if you don't change their present reality. So Bar Church is like, okay, let's spend some time helping people reorient their identity, because that's what Jesus did. And then let's spend the rest of our time actually like doing what Jesus did, which is, we can't perform miracles, but as a society, we're all like stupid rich. So maybe we could like feed some hungry people or like take care of some orphans. So that's one thing. That's a long way of saying one thing I think is changing is I think people who go to church will no longer accept churches that don't make a difference in their world. And then I also think like we're just crazy busy. And so churches that can help people engage meaningfully in spirituality by taking things off people's plate, I think is going to be a really big deal for this next generation. Like, how do we take things off people's plate? Like, people don't need more friends. frankly. They don't need more activities. They don't need more things to do. They don't need more events. They need help navigating their time better. I think those are going to be two. There's a lot, but I think those are going to be two major ways. Those are like two fundamental things that as we're starting Bartrich, we're like, okay, we want to, these are things that we think are going to be pivotal as we like figure out this new iteration of church.
Yeah. Well, I love that. It's stripping away a spirituality that's all built on just give more activity.
Busy.
Yeah. And then it's almost like you can build your metrics on that. Like, well, people are doing all the things we're making them or not making them. Well, kind of making them do. So then it looks like you're showing success at a metrics level, but maybe it's like you're not actually addressing the fundamental problem or issue that is going on.
Yeah, it's the smoke and mirrors. I mean,
yeah.
Which is, I think, my hope with Bartrich. And I don't, to be honest, I like don't know what success looks like right now with Bartrich. I know it's not like just butts and seats. The reality is if you have more people, you can do more good stuff.
Yeah.
But Jesus got quite a bit done with 12 and quite a bit done with, you know, the extra people he had on the periphery. So Bar Church, like, and some of this is just me trying to find out what success looks like, because I am used to showing up on a Sunday and having a lot of bodies and being like, ah, I think we're winning.
Yeah, but then there's energy,
you know? And then at the end of it being like, but did we do anything today?
Yeah.
Other than just seem busy. And I didn't feel like I could always, well, I'll even rephrase that. I felt like most of the time I would come to the end of a season or the end of a day and be like, I'm not sure what we did today mattered.
Yeah.
And I just don't want to dedicate my life to that.
Okay, so therein lies more to unpack. So you were a part of this large church organization. At every metric, you're winning. You're knocking it out of the park. You're like, just like totally rocking this thing. And so I think this is at two levels, like as a leader pastor, but then also reframing it for people that are attenders. You had to go through a process of even letting yourself ask that question of, does this matter what we did? Mm-hmm. So was there more to that season of life where that propelled you into, okay, we really need to rethink this, like strip this whole thing down. Like, I don't know, a moment of, you recognized, like, was it a moment? Maybe it wasn't just kind of like you said before with the other question I asked, but does that make sense? Like,
yeah.
Where I'm getting to?
No, I understand what you're saying. And I think it was moments like where I'd stop and reflect and be like, you know, that's kind of my wiring too. Like I am really reflective. Sometimes to my detriment, like I get a lot of like paralysis by analysis. Anyone who knows me just knows that I spend a lot of time like overthinking things. And so that is a problem. But I would say, I think I thought when I became a quote unquote pastor, whatever that even means, that my purpose, I would find my purpose, quote unquote. Like, okay, this is what I'm supposed to do. I'm supposed to show up on Sundays. And the carrot at the end of the stick would always be whatever is next. Like, I'll feel, which is the same thing as like corporate America, right? So it ends up being the same problem.
Yeah.
It'd be like, okay, as soon as I get an opportunity to start speaking regularly, I'm gonna feel awesome. Or when I feel like I can make high level leadership decisions, I'll feel like I've arrived. You know, like these like things that maybe I won't even be able to articulate at the time. And I think I've like rediscovered my purpose, which has given me new life. Like I even felt when we launched Bartrich, I even felt this tension, like as I was deconstructing everything, like, is this really what I'm supposed to be doing? And now I think I can answer, yes, this is what I'm supposed to be doing right now. But while also realizing, like, I mentioned I have two girls, or I have one girl and then one on the way, due in a couple months. But now I'm like, oh no, my purpose is being a dad. Like there is nothing that I'll ever do that even approaches the importance of being a dad to my little girls. So, which like gives you like a different semblance of freedom too. Like, I don't feel like I need to find my purpose in Bartrich. I feel like I can work through Bartrich to help fulfill my purpose as a dad and as a husband and as a follower of Jesus. It is the thing that is helping me fulfill my purpose to fill in those other roles. And so that But that required a lot of deconstruction, a lot of anxiety, a lot of, do I believe this anymore? If I don't, what do I believe? I don't know. Like, maybe one day I'll have to do this anyway, but like, I don't know how I'll function in a different type of job now that I've done this. But I did have to like rip a lot of stuff down and ask these questions that were really personal questions that just leaked into my professional role at the time. Like, who am I? Is this, you know, these like existential questions
yeah.
that I spend a lot of time in, more time than I ought to do. You know, like I was actually talking with our mutual friend Ryan a while back, and we were both like, you know, what if in a different world we were both mechanics, and we'd be the worst mechanics because I'd be like pouting and I'd be like, what does this oil change even mean? You know, or you know, like, does this even serve a purpose? You know, like I'd be the worst mechanic ever because I'd, for many reasons, but also just because I'd probably just dive into depression because I would be like, why, you know, like, and so like, shout out to the mechanics out there who actually like do something helpful for the world.
Get it done.
Yeah. Actually get it done while I'm like pondering, you know, deep humanity while I'm just sitting there like twirling my thumbs. But anyway, I don't know if I actually answered your question or not, but.
Well, yeah, I feel like it takes, or I guess I'm wondering what it takes for people to get to the point where they go, I'm so unfulfilled with what this, my spirituality actually is. And that's, again, like I was trying to make it, it's like for the pastors out there, I think it's easy to keep like playing the company line and just do whatever you can to keep the organization alive and going. So at that level, but then for a person that's just like attending or they're thinking about like, what is this whole thing? Like, I don't know. I just have this curiosity of what gets a person there. Cause it seems like it's somewhat different, but then also there's some very central themes that I think every person kind of feel, like things they feel that get them to ask that question, to let them go on a journey instead of just be like, well, no, I'm just going to ignore that and just keep going and keep doing the activity for the activity's sake.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, an analogy that we use often at Bar Church, and I'm not the first to coin it all, but, you know, treating the church more as an active gym. And I think a lot of our churches now, people show up and they learn about workouts, but never get asked to actually work out. And so you end up with a bunch of these people who know how to bench press theoretically, but have never actually lifted weights. And anyone who's ever exercised, I mean, again, I'm not like a wild exercise guy, obviously, but describing how to do a squat and doing a squat are two very different things. And you can only describe something so far. And it pales in comparison ultimately to doing a squat and feeling like both the awkwardness and the pain and the stress of all that. And so I think our churches need to get better at asking people to do the workouts and then allowing that to be the teacher. Because the reality is, you know, sticking with the workout analogy, if you do squats wrong and you end up with a sore upper back, you'll probably figure out that that's not the right way to do it. And you need someone's help. Like I'm actually trying to work out a little bit right now. And my buddy Jason is really good at this stuff. And I keep meaning to ask him to come and watch me squat and bench and clean and jerk because I want to make sure I'm doing it right. I think my body's telling me I'm doing right. I think I'm sore in the places that Google tells me I'm supposed to be sore.
Thank God for Google.
Yeah, thank God for Google and for YouTube. Like, you just watch YouTube videos on how to work out. But I, at certain points, I'll need to check in with someone who's better at what I'm trying to get good at so they can then correct my behavior. And the church, I don't think, is always good at creating those environments. I think that historically, maybe they're better at watching the video and correcting the video instead of correcting the workout behavior.
Okay, so let's get back to Bar Church and its actual functionality. So you have this idea of trying something totally different. Mm-hmm. And you said February of 2016?
That's when I left. We didn't have our first event until October of 16. So we're almost a year in, but we were meeting monthly. So I think we're 14 events.
Yeah, gotcha. Okay, so, I mean, just tell us, what does a typical gathering look like? Mm-hmm. I mean, give us as much detail as you can just to kind of get it into our brains.
Yeah, so If you walk in, we meet the first two Sundays now of every month. We meet at Queen Anne Beer Hall. It's this big 8,000 square foot beer hall. Excuse me. It's all, what's the word? Picnic tables. That's not an actual word for it, but you get the picture. They're all picnic tables. So you're sitting across from people. So you show up. We don't have like live music. Some of that is just practically speaking, the acoustics don't make sense in there for us, but also we're just, again, as I said, we're like throwing everything out and then building back up. And the reality is like, there are things that we're adding, but we started basically like, let's do everything different and then start adding from there. So you walk in and there's like just normal music playing in the background. You know, there's Kendrick Lamar or Chance the Rapper or, you know, whatever music, are like, more trendy hip dudes are playing. I don't participate in that, although those are two musicians I love. And so you walk in and, I mean, ideally, it doesn't always feel this way depending on the Sunday, but ideally it feels like a little bit of a party. It's like there's people hanging out. We buy people's first drink. That's something that we like to do just to say, hey, thanks for taking a risk and showing up. So people order either Bloody Mary or Mimosa, or if they don't want, they can grab a coffee. That's fine too, I would say.
Because this meets in the morning.
This meets in the morning, 10 a.m.
Dude, you're starting the day strong.
Starting the day strong. It's the tailgating, man. I'm a big football fan, and so it doesn't feel that foreign to me because I'm used to drinking at 10 in the morning on the weekends. But if you're not used to it, it can be a little shocking. But yeah, like, they have beer mosas, which is one of my like classic favorites. Just, it is what it sounds like. It's beer and orange juice. It's great. It's great for tailgating. So people that want to have a drink, order a drink. People that don't. They have brunch later, so people can order brunch. But people walk in and they hang out and they have about 10 or 15 minutes just to grab a drink, grab a seat. And then we, depending on the Sunday, so we alternate our Sundays between, like, we'd say, like, information based, or again, this is a learning for us. We're figuring out how to like what language to use for our events. So an easier way to decide what eternal and internal, not eternal. That's a Freudian slip, I guess. Another conversation for a different podcast. Internal based, so focusing on us, and then external based, where we do things for people outside of our bar church community. So depending on what Sunday you show up, we'll either start at 10:10, 10:15 and do like a 30 to 40 minute talk of some kind, and then encourage people to, if they want, hang out a little bit, have another drink, order food. And then if we do an external based event, those look, sometimes they're in-house at Queen Anne Beer Hall and sometimes they're out of house. So in July we did, for example, we did a barbecue. We partnered with this organization called Hashtag Lunch Bag. They are a national organization. They have a Seattle chapter. The Seattle chapter, they once a month get together and they make lunches for people experiencing homelessness in our city, and then they go and deliver them all throughout the city. It's really cool, very easy thing for people to jump into and experience together. We did a really cool event with them in January where we made 1,200 lunches, which is a lot, and we deliver them to really every major shelter in Seattle and every major encampment in Seattle, and people just brought boxes and boxes of lunches for people. And again, lunches, like, the goal isn't like, lunches aren't a cure-all, obviously, but it's a great opportunity to just get exposure to what is now becoming and is now a significant human issue in Seattle. Like, we have the third largest homeless population now. Okay. Only behind New York City and LA, which are obviously like way bigger cities. Yeah. So it's a thing in, or I hesitate to say a thing. There are people in desperate need in our city.
Yeah.
So we did that back in January with them, and we love them. Justin, who I mentioned earlier, helps run that, and he's a stud. He's a rad dude. And so we decided to do another event, and we did a barbecue event, and we went to a park that is, we rented out a park. We went through the proper channels, dotted I's and crossed our T's, and rented out a park in Ballard that is known for having a large homeless population that's already there. And then we invited people to pay $10, essentially, throw their $10 into the bucket of money. And then we bought burgers and dogs and chips and water. And then we just went around all of Ballard and just invited people to come and have free lunch on us. So that was an external event.
That's really cool.
It was really cool. I mean, I met more people experiencing, I know more people by name who are experiencing homelessness from that one day than I know for my previous 32 years. Mm. And so half of our events look like, hey, let's learn how to follow Jesus together, or learn how to become more healthy individuals. We're looking through the lens of Jesus. That's what I like to tell people when they ask what Barchurch is. Spirituality through the lens of Jesus. And then the other half of our time, we spend either learning how to help people well, or actually going out and doing it. So yeah. Another example would be this week. We dedicated actually the first part to talk about Charlottesville a little bit, because that was, I feel like if you are a pastor and if you're listening to this and you're a pastor, it's not too late to say something. But if we don't have a, if we have a responsibility, is to lead people situationally, so, and help people process. So we talked about Charlotte a little bit. I said some things about that. And then we, fortunately, I think this had connected with, with what was happening. We had invited a few nonprofits that invest in at-risk youth, vulnerable youth in the city of Seattle, and they shared what they do and how we can help. So that would technically be like an external event. We invited people outside of our church. Hey, you guys are doing great work. Tell us how to do more. And I think, you know, of the like things that our church can like elevator pitch, I think that one of our visions would be to be curators and cheerleaders of great organizations. We don't, the church, I don't feel like we need to be the expert on everything, but the reality is there are hundreds of people doing like really important work on our doorsteps.
Oh yeah.
And my hope is like, how can I just like encourage them? How can we like say, you're keep it up. This is hard work. Probably too hard for me. Like, I don't think I can do it, but I want to cheer you on as you pursue it and let us know how we can help, whether that's financially, whether that's, if people get excited about what you're doing, send them your way to volunteer. We're very like open and loose handed with like how that manifests. But that's kind of our rhythm. So 1 week, yeah. Let's learn. Next week, let's take action. Cause I said this week, but compassion, the first level of compassion is, I use an example of like being in the schoolyard and seeing, witness someone being bullied. A level of compassion is to afterwards talk to the victim and say, I'm so sorry that happened to you. Is there anything I can do to help? I think that's a fairly impotent, it is a variation of compassion, but I feel like that's a fairly impotent variation of compassion. Compassion, as it looks like Jesus, would be to step inside and take the hit on the chin. So we're inviting people that are part of our church to join us as we ask this question. What does compassion in action look like?
I'm worried about the silence. I just wanted to write that down. This quotable to use of your... take it on the chin. That's good. Okay, let's see. Okay, so... I mean, I love this... like your language too, this internal, like how do we grow, develop, evolve spiritually, and then externally, actual, I mean, what, going back to when your phrase is make the world more beautiful, mm-hmm. right? So connecting those two, and you're like on the ground experimenting, new to this whole thing, just trying to figure out what in the heck's going to work.
Yeah. Right?
That's great, man.
Yeah.
So who are you seeing wanting to jump in and participate, you know, because like we're talking about the current iteration of church. Like, okay, you and I both know we've been in church long enough. It's not going to entirely go away,
mm-hmm.
but it's going to continually stop working for an emerging generation. So is that what you're finding? Are you finding people that are like, I've been waiting for something like this, like a different experience or?
Yeah, I would say we don't know yet.
Okay.
You know, we're still new, so, and we're throwing stuff at the wall and seeing what sticks in many ways. Sorry, I got a tickle in my throat. I would say what's interesting is we're, in many ways, like, identifying with people who would say spirituality is a part of their lives, but don't know what to call it.
Really?
I think so, and maybe that's even sometimes where, like, I land. I mean, I don't, okay. but, I, like, on some days I'm like, maybe I just, you know, maybe I just want to, like, you know,
yeah, when you
love
get,
people.
You well, know? Yeah, when you get into one of your like existential crisis moments, yeah. like, wait a minute.
What is religion? Who is God? So I think that is one group. I think another group is people who feel disenfranchised with the current model. But I think in general, I think the thing that we do that appeals to the largest mass, and this isn't strategic, this is just what I want to do. What we want to do is our like focus for like helping people.
Okay.
Like most people aren't like, no, homeless people, we shouldn't help homeless people. I mean, maybe those people exist, but
they should be
finished. I don't know. I don't know very many of them. And so I would say we get a wide variety of people who are close to Amy and I, and so they're showing up to support us. and people who are looking for a different variation of church, and people who we partner with and that just are like, ah, this is cool. I want to be a part of it. And so our range, I think, is really wide. And I think we're still figuring it out. I think I, as an arsonist, have maybe like now I need to like do a better job of like controlling the flames. Cause I think I kind of lit everything on fire and people were like, oh man, it's exciting, but I can't breathe. There's so much smoke. And so I'm like, okay. What do we need to start adding and practically speaking to make this easier and more like just functionally appropriate? Like, for example, we don't have childcare. And so we're starting that in September. And a lot of that is like space wise, like there isn't like a separate room for kids. But even really practical stuff like that, like we haven't had signage until recently and we just finally got signage.
All the things that you're supposed to do in church growth.
I know. And I know it. I just rebelled against it. I was like, no, we're not doing anything in the beginning, even though I know we probably should. I'm not doing anything in the beginning because I want to see freshly what this looks like.
And now like takes so much risk, right?
And
letting go of control.
For sure. And both are like, I will say, I never have felt so anxious about church events, quote unquote, as I have with Bartra stuff, because often I just don't know how they're going to go because they're different. We don't have a template. I'm sure people are doing similar stuff, but I've never seen it done. I know how to do, and this isn't a critique, I know how to do 3 songs, a welcome, a 35-minute message, and a couple songs as people exit.
Yep.
I know how to do that. It's a very straightforward formula. It takes a lot of work, but I know how to do it. You know, one Sunday in December, I did a really short message on slowing down. And then we invited a guy that I met outside of Pike Place singing with a cup. And he has a beautiful voice. If you've been to Pike Place, you've probably even heard him. His name is Mr. Miller. And he sings like a cappella gospel music. And I heard him. And I was like, hey, man, do you want to come sing? I do this thing called Bar Church. I'd love to have you come sing. And so he came and sang a few like a cappella gospel songs after I did a short message. Now that morning, you know, like we had someone go pick him up and bring him there. But I didn't know how that was going to go. Like, I've never seen that done before. It's not like wild, but I'm like, hopefully he answers his phone when we call him in the morning, you know, and hopefully hopefully he doesn't get stage, you know, like, I don't know. And so a lot of our events are like, and a lot of it is just my own pride wanting people to show up, you know, like nobody wants to throw the party that no one comes to. Mm. And I'm throwing the party that asks people to take risks and shocks people a little bit and often ask them to do something. Like we're not throwing a lot of parties where all the booze is free, which is also, I would argue, the best parties don't involve like all free booze. Like usually like people like participate or they like chip in $5 for a keg cup, or like, you know, John from down the street brings like his like random 18 pack of miscellaneous, whatever. And so we're asking him anyways, we're saying like, hey, BYOB, but that's a harder sell sometimes than open bar. And we are like we are the BYOB. We're asking people to be uncomfortable and we're asking people to help grill for people experiencing homelessness. My guess is most people that were at our barbecue event, that was the closest and proximate they've been to people experiencing homelessness. Like I'm fairly confident. So we're taking these risks, and in many ways we're taking it because the way we've designed things, and this is maybe a conversation for another time, but like we have really, really low overhead. And so we're taking all these risks that maybe some other churches just can't literally afford to take. They just can't. But we hang out in a bar and we don't have like all these facility expenses, and we don't have like big staff or any staff, and like we don't even have like setup is like 20 minutes. We show up and we plug our mixer into their speakers and we're done. Like we just don't have all these other things that churches think they need to have, but that they end up, I think, getting chained to. Mm-hmm. So one of my other many hopes for Bar Church is I would love to be successful, because I hope that like we can tell other churches like, here's some risks you can take.
Yeah.
And here's some risks you definitely shouldn't. But here's some things that we've learned along the way, because we were able to like we were able to take some pretty like big risks that you just don't have the flexibility to take right now.
Yeah.
Which is what, you know, essentially like privilege is, right? Privilege is you can stick your neck out a little bit further because you have a safety net. Like we have a safety net because we don't have all these expenses. And if Bar Church tumbles tomorrow, like people aren't out of jobs and healthcare and all that. Like you just, like we can just take wild risks and nobody's going to get hurt.
Yeah. Okay. I want to get your thoughts on, this might take us in a little bit of a different direction for a minute and then we got to wrap this puppy up. But, many people that I think listen to this podcast and, would have affinity towards something that like what you're doing, right? I think what can happen for those of us on this side of rethinking it all, we can look back at people on the journey and be like, what's your problem? How do you not see it? What's wrong with you? Right? So, and I bet you've had those moments where you maybe had somebody else combative towards you or like, that's not church enough, right? Or whatever. So I guess what I'm asking for is like, what would you say to a person that maybe is further along in the journey as they're trying to figure out their own feelings of why does it make me so mad when people don't get it? And then also just how to navigate some of that, those relationships and conversations that might feel like we need to defend or whatever.
Yeah. I would first start off with saying I'm actually not great at this. Like I fall into this all the time. Like, why don't you get it? Part of that is my personality. I'm a fairly confrontational human. Like I like conflict. My wife and I, like, we don't fight hardly all anymore. But when we were dating, we would have these explosive fights. And I think in many ways, I won't recommend that as how you like center your relationship, but our conflict helped us breed intimacy. So I guess my first advice would be to walk towards it. I think that confrontation is, particularly in the church world, people don't, I mean, actually normal humans don't like conflict. It's hard, it's challenging, it's uncomfortable. But I think the church has to be better at walking towards conflict. Jesus definitely was. He never shied away from it. And I think part of the reason he never shied away from it is because you cannot grow unless you first admit where you're at. I even think this is kind of a tangent, but we went to Berlin in December. And one of the things that really resonated with me, and obviously that Berlin is just covered in history and really obviously like damaging history. One thing they do that I think I really respect, though, is they are really honest about the tragedies that they are responsible for as a nation. One thing even really simple is they have these things, I'm probably going to say it wrong, with Stolpelstein, I don't know how to say it. But as you walk through the city of Berlin, there are these bronze plaques all around the city. They are mixed in with the old brick, that cobblestone that you're walking around. And as you're walking, you look down, you see them. There's hundreds of thousands throughout the whole city. And in German, it says, here lays, and then the name, and then when they died and either missing from, and it says what, internment camp, or if they died there, it says died. And it's really intense, obviously, and it's sad. But the reason I find such value in that is it does not give people permission to forget where they've been corporately. And so people are constantly reminded of this is who we've been, and forces people to have a conversation about recognizing who they've been and who they want to be. And I think if the church and if we as individuals ever want to grow into this next iteration, whatever church looks like, we have to be honest about who we've been and where we're heading. And if I'm really honest, I know that I have fallen woefully short of where, like, I'm a better version of myself today than I was last year, in the year before, in the year before, in the year before. And I think I have hit a new season of my life where I try to give myself the same grace that I think God gives me, which is really hard to do. But I think our ability to show ourselves grace will be really formulative in how we extend grace to the people that sometimes challenge us, we'll say, that make it hard for us. Like, why aren't you here yet? You can be really patient with that person if you recognize and forgive prior Nate for not being there at some point in his journey. So if I could be like, ah, man, that was you then. And aren't you glad that you have grown out of that? And aren't you grateful for the people in your life that have helped you get there? And I would argue every person that helped me get there is a person who first showed me grace. So yeah, how do I,
that's good.
And all that being said, I'm not very good at actually living that out. I am trying to really intentionally be like, okay, how do I be patient with people on their journey? And again, like, you know, we didn't even talk about politics, but I would say that it's been, that's particularly challenging in our atmosphere because everything is so polarizing. And I would say even scary a little bit for many people, even as like a white dude of privilege, like who grew up in suburbia and lives in the most progressive city in the nation, one of the most progressive cities, maybe on the globe. It's hard to live actively in a, which is maybe why the message of, this is why like Jesus is really important. The message of Jesus is radical, like how he extends grace to people, how he dies at the hands of his captors, and his last breath is, Father, forgive them, they know not what they do. That's radical.
Yeah. Dude, that's so good. We're going to stop there because that's just, that hits it, man. Well, just tell people, tell our guests how they can find out more about what you're up to. Where do we go? What do we do?
Social media is great. So Bar Church, that's it. Bar Church. It's a Black BC. And we are, our website is, it's live, but it's like unfinished, but you can't go there. It's just barchurch.com. That's going to be going. That'll be like full in the next couple of months. Right now, I just decided, yeah, whatever. People can go look at the incomplete website. They'll still get a better picture than if it didn't exist. And so barchurch.com, again, we meet Sundays at 10 a.m. Everything's online as well on Vimeo and stuff like that. So feel free to check us out and stop by sometime. And also in general, like if you just are like, if you aren't in Seattle or Barchurch isn't your thing, we want to be encouragers too. Like, keep it up. You're doing better than you think you are.
Yeah. Cool, man. Well, dude, thanks so much for being on the show with us. Stoked for people to hear from you. And I even just love the way you talk about like your website. I mean, you're just like, so it's like this raw honesty that I think is missing in a lot of Christian circles. It's always, everything is so guarded, or it's got to be, look, everything's going to be pretty or planned. I just feel like we got to get back to that. Just like that raw, I don't know how to say it, but just like that raw humanity of who we really are. So like, I appreciate that.
Our like slogan thing, our my good friend Seth, who does all our design work, came up with it, and it's low bar, high spirits. And
yes,
the bar is low at Bar Church. It's not high. You will not, if you're expecting polish, it is not what you will get. And we're okay with that.
Yeah, dude. Well, I love it, man. Thanks again for being with us.
Absolutely, man.
All right.
Hey everyone, thanks for listening to this episode of The Voices Podcast. If you want to get the links for anything we talked about today, they will be in the show notes on patreon.com/voicespodcast. If you go there, you can scroll down to the episode and you will see all the links right there.
And if you're interested in becoming a supporter of the show, we are on Patreon. So you can go to our Patreon website and you'll see different levels of supporting the show. That helps us to get different guests on the show, put more time and resources to this. And one of the things we want to do is be a resource to you on your spiritual journey. That was the whole vision behind this in the first place. So one of those ways we do that is at different levels, there are different resources that we'll make available to you as you are working through reimagining faith.
We also want you to be able to join the conversation with us, so make sure you leave us a comment on Facebook or tweet at us on Twitter. We are Voices Podcast on Facebook and at Voices Pod on Twitter. Let us know what you thought, agreed with, disagreed with, and what you want to hear more about.
All right. Thanks for listening.